Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 193 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we're going to be talking, or maybe tackling, a topic that has yet to be discussed here on the Healthy Skin Show. I've actually mentioned it a couple of times in my histamine series, but I've never really fully explained the rationale behind why I think immunoglobulins should be used so much more often in chronic skin rash cases. Now, if you just heard me say immunoglobulins and you're like, huh, Jen, what was that word? I have no idea what that is. I've never heard of it before. Or maybe you have read it somewhere, but you really don't understand what it means. Don't worry. My guest today is going to break it all down for you so you will understand what immunoglobulins are before the end of this episode. And by the way, this is a part one to a two-part interview that I did with Karan Krishnan. For those of you who have loved his episodes here on the Healthy Skin Show, I can promise you that you are about to have your mind blown not only in this episode, but in the next one coming up. Now, here's the thing. I pursued Karan to have him on the show to talk about immunoglobulins because as I began to play around with them more in my clinical practice, and I also started to get creative, thinking about how they work and the problems that clients that I work with kind of go through and are really suffering with, how could we use something like this in a way to help get them tangible results, right? Because that's really important to me, that as you're going through things, you're getting tangible results. Granted, some of those things can take time. Not everything is immediate, but immunoglobulins are one of those things that you can, when used in the right scenarios, can actually get you some pretty significant relief. And so I just want to detail for you a few instances or examples of where these have really helped clients. So in histamine overload cases, which I've already alluded to in the histamine series, so if you missed that series, I would highly recommend to go back and check out those episodes on histamine overload. Also, to people who are really struggling with an intense amount of itchiness, whether it's histamine-driven or not. And also, where I have concern that as someone goes through a protocol, they will likely flare. And so I think a lot of times people go into this idea of, like, when you do a protocol, you're just supposed to get better. Like, every single day, one foot in front of the other, you're going to get there. It's not usually like that. Sometimes you take five steps forward to take two steps back. And there's this little dance of back and forth, but you do slowly get to the end point that you're headed toward, but it can take time. And it can also feel like the process is really slowed down because of that five steps forward, two steps back feeling. But immunoglobulins are something really, really interesting because they help in so many ways that even things like binders don't always help. And so I am excited to share this interview with you today, because today is going to be all about, like, kind of the nuts and bolts of what immunoglobulins are, how they could be helpful, where they've been used clinically in more traditional senses, because this actually comes from gastroenterology, believe it or not. This was a type of prescribed, I don't know if you'd call, I guess it was a prescribed medication. That's how you would describe it, though it's not medication. They're immunoglobulins, which are something your body actually makes or is supposed to make. And so for the longest time, it was very difficult to get your hands on these types of products without a prescription. And you had to have certain presentations, like, for example, inflammatory bowel disease with incredible diarrhea. And now, with time, we've seen these products become more accessible. And as we go through this whole process of incorporating these into a clinical practice, we learn the different ways in which they can be helpful, which may not be apparent just in gastroenterology, for example. And so I've had clients who've started to use these where they've been better able to sleep through the night. They're a lot more comfortable and they've noticed a significant decrease in their histamine overload picture. I've had other clients who've noticed a significant drop in their inflammation and much less reactivity to the antimicrobial protocols that they are on. And that ultimately adds up to people feeling a lot more comfortable. And when we feel more comfortable, most of us actually just generally feel better. We sleep better, we look better, our mood is better. We're just all around feeling better. Are we 100%? No. But that improvement is significant enough that it can really help lift someone's spirits to help keep them going. So that's why I am so passionate about sharing this two-part series with you. In the event that you have never heard one of the episodes with Karan, allow me this opportunity to introduce him to you. Karan Krishnan is a research microbiologist and has been involved in the dietary supplement and nutrition market for the past 18 years. He comes from a university research background, having spent several years with hands-on R&D in the fields of molecular medicine and microbiology at the University of Iowa. Karan established a clinical research organization where he designed and conducted dozens of human clinical trials in human nutrition. Karan is also the co-founder and partner in New Science Trading LLC, a nutritional technology development and research company. And he is the co-founder and chief science officer at Microbiomes Labs. He is a frequent lecturer on the human microbiome at medical and nutritional conferences and is a guest expert on national and satellite radio, having appeared in several international documentaries and has been a guest speaker on several international health summits as a microbiome expert. He is currently involved in 16 novel human clinical trials on probiotics and the human microbiome. And Karan is also on the scientific advisory board or is a science advisor for 7 other companies in the industry. And as you know him, he is one of the top most favorite guests here at the Healthy Skin Show. So without further ado, get ready to have your mind blown as we go into part one on why you should consider immunoglobulins as part of your skin rash protocol. Hi, Karan. Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for having me. It's so great to be back.
I know. Well, you know, I kind of pestered you about this because I thought that you'd be the perfect person, obviously, to talk about immunoglobulins. I've gotten a ton of questions about this, and I've been using them in my practice with my clients. And people are like, wait, I don't understand. How could immunoglobulins help with skin issues? And so we're going to talk about some interesting things today. So first of all, what are immunoglobulins? So for somebody who doesn't know, what is an immunoglobulin and what does it do?
Yeah. So immunoglobulin is a big, fancy, nerdy term for antibodies. So everybody's now familiar with antibodies because through this whole pandemic, we've been talking about antibodies being the protection that we develop immunologically against, you know, the pathogen, right? So the whole nature of antibodies is they are specific. Most antibodies are. We'll talk about the different classes of antibodies, but they tend to be specific to a specific target. And their whole job is to bind to that target, whether it be a virus, a bacteria, a toxin, an environmental particle, whatever it may be, they bind to it, they coat it, they neutralize it, and then it gets removed from the body. Inside the body, in circulation, when an antibody binds to something, like a, say this is a virus and you get an antibody comes in and binds to it, it signals that that whole complex should now be consumed by macrophages and dendritic cells in the immune system that can come along, eat that whole thing and destroy it and get rid of it, right? So antibodies are these proteins. Immunoglobulins, which are antibodies, are proteins that find, seek out, and neutralize things that could cause inflammation, infection, and so on in the body. So, and then there's different classes. So let's talk quickly about the different classes then. while we're at it. So we've got our IgA, which some people may be familiar with. It's called, typically referred to as secretory IgA. And the reason it's referred to as secretory IgA is because it's found mostly in your secretory fluids, right? So in your saliva, in your tears, you find some coming out in your sweat, in the mucosal lining of the gut, the mucosal lining throughout the body. So in your nasal passages, your lungs and all that, it's kind of like your first line defense, immunoglobulins or antibodies. Now, the interesting thing about IgA, which you produce a lot of it if you're healthy throughout the day, is that IgA is specifically designed to be not specific, right? So it's kind of a random grab at as many things as it can neutralize. So you don't want IgA to be highly specific. You want it to be a little bit more general, so that it can bind lots of different things that enter into the system, like, you know, potential environmental allergens and viruses, bacteria, and so on. You also find that IgA kind of coats your gut commensal bacteria to a certain degree, so that the gut commensal bacteria, if they make their way deeper into the gut lining, doesn't elicit an inflammatory reaction. Right? When your immune system sees something that's covered with IgA, it goes, oh, okay, that thing's not going to cause the body harm. We don't need to respond to it. It's basically neutralized or covered or under control. But keep in mind that IgA is nonspecific, and you need to continuously be producing IgA. And the types of IgA you produce are based on your exposure level to things in life, right? So if you're out and you get exposed to lots of different bacteria, viruses, environmental particles and all that, you produce a really diverse set of IgA. If you're not exposed to a lot of stuff, you live like a hermit inside your house, you sterilize everything, you don't see a lot of people, then you produce really low diversity of IgA, and it's a low level of things that the IgA can bind. Then you've got IgE, which most people are familiar with, also is a bad one, but IgE elicits an inflammatory allergic type of response when it binds to things, right? And here's the crux of it. IgE is kind of a default protection if you don't have enough IgA. Okay, so what happens? IgE is typically found on the lining of the gut. And in the lining of the gut, IgE not only plays a role to bind things, but it also plays a role with like mineral balance and hydration and all kinds of things outside of the whole binding capacity. But what your body does is if you don't have enough IgA production to protect as a first line of defense, it starts to send IgE out into the secretory secretions and into the periphery of the body, because now it needs some sort of antibody out there, right? But the problem is when IgE binds stuff, it triggers this whole eosinophil, you know, allergy type of reaction. So one of the key things in reducing IgE is to increase IgA, because they counteract one another, right? Then you have IgM. IgM is this big, awesome neutralizing antibody, right? It's the biggest of them all. And when it sees a virus or bacteria, it just globs it up, eats it up, neutralizes it, and gets it out of the system, allows your immune system to learn what that bad thing is. But it's a neutralizing, powerful antibody. But it's expressed relatively quickly when you run into something like a new pathogen. But it goes away after a period of time, typically after 3-4 weeks. And then it's taken, and then the function of neutralizing is taken over by IgG, right? So that's the last kind of antibody we'll talk about. IgG is the long-term, highly specific antibody, right? IgM is somewhat specific, and it's big, and it's awesome. It neutralizes everything. It gets things under control. And then the highly specific IgG comes along, learns what that compound is, whether it's a virus, bacteria, toxin. Then it produces an antibody specific to that you then can hold in your system for the rest of your life or for at least several years, right? So then the next time you encounter that thing, your B cells that make the IgG will kick it off right off the bat. The IgG will go out, find it, neutralize it, and you never even knew you had an infection or got exposed to anything. Does that make sense, hopefully?
It does. And so, you know, it's interesting because my first exposure to this was really around diarrhea cases. Mm-hmm. People who had severe IBD, or, mm-hmm. or excuse me, severe IBSD, so mm-hmm. irritable bowel syndrome. I've also got inflammatory bowel disease as well. Right. I've even seen some information on that as well, but they suffered from, you know, they're going to the bathroom 20, 25, 30 times a day. Nothing is solid. And so that was my first exposure to immunoglobulins. So for somebody listening to this who maybe is going, wait, there's a connection between like diarrheal issues and immunoglobulins. Could you talk a little bit about why they might help somebody who mm-hmm. has severe gut issues like this, where they're more on the diarrhea side?
Yeah. So, and the supplemental immunoglobulins we're talking about are all in that IgG class, right? So there are some IgM in there, but for the most part, it's IgG. Now, keep in mind, naturally, we have lots of IgG floating around, but it's in our circulation. We actually don't have much of any in our gut lining, right? In our gut lining, it's predominantly IgA. So when we're able to supplement with IgG, what we're doing is we're providing another unique layer of protection in our gut lining that doesn't exist in our own physiology, right? Because all our IgG, that is the most potent protector against things like toxins, viruses, and bacteria, is in our circulation. It's not in the mucosa lining, right? So taking supplemental IgG gives you this unique protection in the mucosa lining. So why does it help with things like diarrhea associated with IBS or IBD and so on? Well, most of these gut conditions, especially irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, are driven by pathogens, right? So it's the presence of pathogens, it's a presence of a dysbiotic flora. And especially when it comes to loose bowels, the pathogens are driving it through toxin production, right? So Clostridium difficile is a great example. If you have chronic Clostridium difficile, they're producing their toxins, and their toxins, what the toxins do is cause looseness in the bowel, right? And the reason why their toxins do that, understanding this from the bacteria's perspective, is when a pathogenic organism is in the gut, it's trying to compete with all of the commensal bacteria, right? There's limited real estate in there, so they're all competing for space with one another. One of the ways that these bacteria compete for space is they cause massive diarrhea, which sloughs off a lot of the top layer of the mucus, which is where a lot of their competition is living, right? So they're trying to clear real estate so that they can take over. That's why their toxins are designed to give you loose bowels, right? And if you have chronic loose bowels, it's because you're chronically exposed to those toxins. Now, you take an immunoglobulin, which is a big group of antibodies, and some of those antibodies are going to be specific for that bacteria's toxin. Some of it's even going to be specific for the bacteria. So now what you're doing is neutralizing the toxin and the bacteria in the gut, so its effects are no longer creating the issues that you're seeing. And because you're no longer having that continuous loose bowels, your own commensal bacteria have a chance to start to regrow because they're not getting washed out all the time, right? So just, you know, neutralizing, slowing down the exposure to the pathogens and their toxins will go a long way towards helping your gut start to heal again, because it's the pathogen that's not letting the healing process occur. And that's the same thing that happens in inflammatory bowel disease, right? IBD is associated with severe dysbiosis and toxin production and recruitment of inflammatory cells or inflammatory immune cells into that region where you end up getting attacks of your own gut lining. All of that is toxin mediated. And so if the IgG can go in there and start neutralizing that toxin, it allows the gut to heal. So it's pretty clear. And that's a key connection to the skin as well.
Yeah. And I want to just say, too, that the immunoglobulins have been used in conventional gastroenterology. Mm-hmm. I know that there were products. It was like a medication version of it for a really mm-hmm. long time. And now we're starting to see it show up in supplemental forms, which is, you know, a lot of people have asked me on my shop, they've seen the Mega IgG 2000 and they're like, wait, what is that? And how can that be helpful? And this is one really great way that it can be helpful. You know, it's interesting that too, I have some clients who have on stool testing an elevation or high level of secretory IgA. Mm-hmm. Would this be contraindicated in that instance where you do have an elevated secretory IgA, or would it be helpful Your thoughts. I obviously realize case to case is different.
Sure, yeah. Now, in general, elevated secretory IgA should not present as a contraindication for using IgG, right? So this IgG, when you take it supplementally, stays in the gut lining. It's binding and neutralizing things that could cause toxicity and inflammation in the gut lining. And then once it binds its target, then the whole thing moves out through defecation, right? So it doesn't stay in there, doesn't cause any changes to what your immune system is excreting, right? It's not like because you took supplemental IgG, somehow you produce more IgA. It's not quite connected in that way. So I would say there's no contraindication. And elevated IgA, can be indicative of problem, but it also could be just kind of their natural response to things, right? Their body's natural response to eating food and so on. Anytime you put in foreign particles in there, your immune system in the gut kind of goes, okay, we got to prepare to defend against all this stuff, and it kicks up the IgA production. So it can vary from person to person, but there's no need to think that any changes in your IgA could be contraindicative or an issue with IgG use. Mm-hmm.
And so for those who are more on the constipated side, like what if you're not going to the bathroom every day, like maybe every 3 days, every 4 days, you're like really constipated, would this potentially be helpful in those types of cases? Or is it better for those who have normal bowel movements or are on the looser side?
It can help. So in part, it depends on why they're constipated. To me, the vast majority of chronic constipation cases are due to leakiness in the gut. Right? That's a disruption in the enteric nervous system. So that's a nerve system that covers your entire digestive tract. And that's a nerve system that's directly connected to your brain. And so the linchpin for where the brain and the gut communicate is this area called the dorsal vagal complex, right? That's where the signals from the brain for the bowels to move, both the migrating motor complex, which is kind of an electrical sweeping of the bowel, and also the peristaltic activity, which is the actual contraction of the smooth muscles of the bowels to move things along. All of those signals come from the brain. And if you have leakiness in the gut, you have things like endotoxins that leak through the lining of the gut, enter into the enteric nervous system. It can move up the vagus nerve and lodge itself in the dorsal vagal complex, thereby shutting off the communication between the gut and the brain, right? So a lot of the chronic constipation and the stasis in the bowel is driven by leakiness in the gut, which again comes from dysbiosis, too much production of LPS and so on, inflammation in the lining of the gut. These are the key things that this helps with. So I would say a significant number of people that suffer from chronic constipation will probably see some benefit from this. And then on top of that, they probably need to go a little bit further in working on sealing up the gut, trying to kick on the migrating motor complex and the peristaltic activity with prokinetics and so on to try to help the bowels move.
And for somebody who's really struggling with like a fungal overgrowth, mm-hmm. I find a lot of times too constipation, not always, but sometimes constipation can be driven by fungal mm-hmm. imbalances, even SIFO, so small intestine fungal overgrowth. Do you find that these are also helpful when you're dealing with fungal overgrowth?
Yeah, in large part because the IgG binds fungal toxins from mold and fungus. Right. So this particular IgG binds, I think, 12 different mycotoxins, including the biggest offenders like aflatoxin and so on. But also just being able to bind and neutralize the actual organisms themselves. Not only does it kind of neutralize the organisms, but it ruins their ability to metabolize and be competitive in that environment, right? So it gives then your commensal microbes who are supposed to control the overgrowth of fungus, it gives them a leg up in that competitive spirit. Because again, anytime there's a fungal overgrowth, it's an opportunistic situation, right? There, where because of some suppression of either your immune system, some suppression of your microbiota, you've now got this opportunistic growth of fungus. So being able to put a little bit of dampening on the ability of the fungus to grow will bring back some advantage to your commensal organisms to compete.
And when you're specifically talking about fungal, like you said, this IgG, you're referring to the IgGs, or the immunoglobulins that are in the Megaspore, or excuse me, we've talked about Megaspore a lot, but the Mega IgG 2000, is that correct? So you've like handpicked, essentially, is that what you're saying? You've like handpicked certain classes or types of immunoglobulins to be in this for certain, I'm just trying to kind of, you know, it's interesting.
So it's really hard to handpick the specific immunoglobulins, but what you can do, which is why this product is so effective and why it was and still is actually marketed as a drug through gastroenterology, but we have it as a supplement as well. The reason why it is so uniquely potent, number one, is because a high concentration of IgG immunoglobulins in it, right? It's about 55% of the mass is IgG, immunoglobulin G. The other thing is how it's obtained. So these immunoglobulins come from bovine source, so they come from cows, right? And what's good about that is you've got cows that are out there in pastures, in the environment. And so what's happening is the cows are getting exposed to all kinds of stuff like viruses, bacteria, mold, environmental particles, and so on. And so the cow's immune system are producing antibodies against all of this stuff. And then what we get to do is take the cow's antibodies, concentrate it to a high level, and now we've got this very diverse set of immunoglobulins because they come from an organism, from an animal that's outside, that's ruminating outside, that gets huge exposures to things outside. So it's a very diverse classification of IgG. It's a very high concentration of IgG, and it's very well purified and preserved so that you get all the functionality out of IgG as well. IgG, which is the immunoglobulin we're talking about, which is an antibody, is a protein compound, right? So one of the things you have to be sensitive about with protein compounds is how you treat and process it. Proteins are sensitive to things like heat, and certain types of stress like pressure, pH, and so on, where the structure of the immunoglobulin can kind of fall apart because the structure is determined by protein amino acid binding, right? So one of the things that the company that we work with that makes this is really perfected is the very gentle purification process to preserve the structure and thereby function of the immunoglobulin. So it's as far as I know, it's the only product of its kind on the marketplace. This high concentration immunoglobulin, broad spectrum immunoglobulin product is the only kind in the marketplace.
And does it just, if you supplement with an immunoglobulin, does it just stay in, I guess, the gut? Because you start in the mouth and it ultimately, if you're taking it via a pill, it's probably, I'm not sure when those immunoglobulins would be released. I would assume at some point in the stomach or small intestine. But does it stay in the GI tract or do they migrate into the body?
Yeah, so they don't migrate into the body. And there's actually a number of studies on that to see if they do. But they don't. They stay within the GI tract. There's a lot of things for it to bind in the GI tract and basically get used up. So these are, one-use antibody. This is an antibody and it finds a target and it grabs onto it, then that antibody's work is done, right? It's grabbed its target, it's neutralized it, and now it's going to move out through defecation like anything else that your body doesn't need. Now you can, and you bring up a good point, it does release at the terminal end of the stomach. So you get some exposure in the stomach, but mostly in the intestines, mostly in the small and large intestine. But if you have oral issues, right, if you have thrush, or you have other issues within your oral cavity, you could open up the powder and then mix it into a little bit of liquid and then put it in your mouth and hold it for a little while to give you a little bit of immunoglobulin protection in the mouth itself, right? Our mouth is an amazing source of pathogens and probably one of the most potent source of pathogens that create problems throughout the rest of the body. So that's another way of taking it.
How fascinating was just this first half of the conversation, because I can promise you it's about to get even more interesting. And we're going to cover all of those topics in part two. Get ready to hear all about histamines and the use of immunoglobulins to help if you're really struggling with a histamine overload picture, and all of the questions that listeners and readers have sent to me about whether immunoglobulins would be the right fit for them and different ins and outs and whatnot. So we're going to cover all of this like FAQ stuff in part two. So stay tuned. All of the links and resources and everything that we discuss can be found at skinterrupt.com/193. And you can leave your questions and comments there in regards to what you've heard so far. I'm happy to do my best to get good answers headed your way. And if you're interested in getting your hands on a bottle of the Mega IgG 2000, which we discuss, you can do so by heading to getmegaspore.com, and there you'll be able to grab a bottle for yourself. That way you can test it out, see if it works for you, if you think this is the right fit for your case. And if you know someone who would absolutely love to tune into this particular episode, make a point to share it with them, because how great is it when you get to just share the information that we're sharing, right? It helps the community as a whole become better educated, ask better questions, and start realizing you actually have a lot more options out there that perhaps you just haven't heard of yet. And last but not least, make a point to rate and review the Healthy Skin Show on your podcast platform, and then hit the subscribe button. That way you never miss any of the research, the hope, the inspiration, and any of these like quirky, out-of-the-box ways of looking at your case that are headed your way every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode, which is part two to this conversation.